right, everyone. Welcome to another awesome episode here at the Crypto 101 Podcast. I'm your host, Pizza Mind, today recording from a bunker somewhere near an Air Force base, prepared for what may be one of the wildest weeks of our life. And I am joined here by a veteran of wild weeks, having one himself over there in France. I'd like to introduce everyone to Arnaud Castillo, CEO and founder of CrunchDAO. Welcome.
Hi, thank you, Aaron, for the invitation.
It's our pleasure to have you. You're a veteran in this financial game and the financial collapse game as well. You've been in TradFi for a long, long time before coming over to the crypto space. Let's start with the world at large before we get into CrunchDAO. We're recording this right now on Monday, March 20th. We just had Credit Suisse bought over the weekend by UBS without the vote of their shareholders. And this is happening in Switzerland, of all places, not, you know, the Seychelles or something. What is going on in the banking world right now, Arno, from your vantage point?
So I would say that Credit Suisse is a very special situation that has been lasting for a long time. I think it's not new that they are having little difficulties. It feels like they have been in all the bad trades. We remember Archegos, for example. And basically, with what happened with Silicon Valley Bank, I mean, people got a little bit scared, obviously, you know, from what was happening. And when people start to pull out their funds in a situation where the bank is already in a difficult situation and where trust is lost somehow, it gets very difficult. And I think that's probably the best solution that UBS buys Credit Suisse.
By one way or another. So you were around in TradFi for the 2008 collapse. Are you seeing any similarities between now and then, or are we still a long way off from things getting that bad?
Well, so if you recall 2008, it was really, really, really worse. I mean, for me, that's my impression. There was a total, it was a total disaster what was happening with subprime and the level of exposure of banks like Lehman Brothers, obviously, but others also. And I remember in that time in 2008, everybody was thinking, I have an insurance for my deposit up to, depending on the country, some countries $100,000, in other countries $250,000, and people were starting to think, you know, what do they have to do with their cash? Whether they have to open several bank accounts and just to save what they could save, and it was really disastrous. I think here it's a special situation, I would say. Hopefully, it's not going to last too long. Silicon Valley Bank situation. For me, it's basically a problem of the regulation, actually, and the problem of the accounting of the assets sitting on the balance sheet, which made the thing actually not looking too good. And it's funny, but I had, you know, messages on my Telegram from VCs telling me if I have funds at SVB, I should pull them out, you know. So basically, if everybody's doing that, and I think it's like something like $40 billion went were actually taken out in 2 days. I mean, I don't think a lot of banks, especially a small quote, like a small banks, it was 16 banks, I think, in the US. So it's not too small, but given the size, $40 billion of assets, probably it's like 40% of the assets of the bank. I mean, they cannot handle that for sure.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're going to have to wait and see what else happens this week. It's going to be something we're going to be glued to Twitter 24/7. But in the meantime, let's talk about your story. What motivated you to come over to crypto and leave the prestigious world of banking behind? Like, you were with some of the top companies. You're a guy who knows what he's doing. What was it that attracted you to the crypto space? And why did you decide to be a founder of CrunchDAO?
So I didn't go directly from banking to crypto. I basically work in finance at Lehman Brothers Deutsche Bank. And then after starting in 2000, I was an entrepreneur in the internet businesses and the insurance businesses. And I went after selling my exiting my second business, I decided I wanted to come back to finance, and I really was really interested in the idea of crowdsourcing research. And this is how I came out with CrunchDAO, the idea to have a community of data scientists that can work together to power hedge funds. I thought it was really that was the future of even investment management. Because if you want to use AI, I was using a lot of AI in my previous startup and in insurance business, where AI is very powerful, but it's very different from AI in finance. But I figured out, using AI somehow to get valuation of companies was really powerful. And so I thought this was the route for the future of investment management.
That's awesome. I remember seeing a movie called Pi when I was younger, P.I.
Yeah,
it was about a guy who was, basically living in a dark room for months at a time, trying to figure out how to predict the stock market. A great movie if any of our listeners haven't seen it. Is that kind of what CrunchDAO is? And how successful are these algorithms that the data scientists are coming up with?
So, this movie is fantastic. It's in black and white. I think I don't recall the name of the guy who made the movie, but I think it's a very famous guy. Probably you can find it. And Pi, it's not easy to find it, actually. I think to be able to see it, I think you really have to search a little bit. But it's a fantastic movie. And yes, the guy gets really nuts working with figures and data and crunching data in different ways. That's probably a lot of what we do. Because it's not easy, to figure out what's happening in the market, and we're using basically risk models. So I don't know if you want me to get technical, but we believe that we can see a pattern in the market, and the idea is to say, okay, since we can see pattern in the market, now can we look at the history of 10 years history, and look at all the stocks in the universe, let's say the top 1,000 or 2,000 stocks, like the Russell 2000, more or less. And can we find patterns that we can actually predict for the future? And then we can probably use machine learning to look to identify pattern and then to be able to give predictions. And that's extremely powerful. But you need to do a lot of work on the data because it's not that simple. I was talking about the insurance business before. Insurance business, it's very simple. You have if you look at the risk, I mean, you have different variables, and the variables give you an exposure to a certain risk. That's pretty straightforward, and it's just looking at different people at different risk, and that's quite straightforward. In finance, basically everything is moving. You talk about the collapse of Lehman Brothers in 2008. Well, the data scientist who is looking at his data set in 2008 didn't have this information before. Never happened before. Subprime crisis never happened before. So it was difficult to know whether your model would go through this crisis. And same thing with COVID crisis. And another one is the recent interest increase. It's something new. It's a new environment, new regime, and that's the difficulty of the exercise is to find out whether you have a model that is strong enough to be able to identify what is happening today and how you should value stocks relative to each other in the market.
There are a couple assumptions that I personally make when trying to analyze stuff like this. One assumption I make is that Wyckoff market cycles still hold true today. And the other assumption is the chart is the only source of truth. If you listen to all the news and narrative out there, it's kind of like life imitating art, the art being the candles on the charts of actual decisions being made across the world about certain assets or asset classes or the markets themselves. Do you find that these assumptions hold true in your research, or is there a better way of looking at things?
So the chart is one of the driving forces of the market. Okay. Simply put, we just call it momentum. That's the main one, for example, that we would call. Basically, it's the idea is that if you look at the last, if you look at any period, any cross section, any months, and you look at the historical performance, you look, you find out that the stocks that have done better momentum-wise, which is looking over the last say 12 months, I've been performing better next month than the stock that had a negative momentum. So that would be like a trend following strategy, and that does work actually. Okay, and that has worked a lot for a long time. Not every time. Sometimes there is it doesn't work, but it works over the long run. But there are many other things that are more fundamental, you know, like you know, what the growth of the company is, or what the return on capital is, and all these ratios, looking more at cash flows and return on capital is very important also. Because any asset is also a matter of, you know, any asset is you have to look at the return and the risk. The risk is also very important, obviously. So the higher the balance sheet, the higher the debt, the higher the interest expense, basically probably the lower the valuation in front of this stock. So we try to have this all these metrics. And from these metrics, so it can be fundamental analysis, alternative analysis, as you said, chart analysis, any kind of RSI or moving average. I mean, there are many. We can use that to get what we call the data set, and which gives us a pattern in the market.
How can we apply some of these philosophies to crypto trading, where there isn't any cash flows for the most part, and it's a little bit more challenging to find assets that are mispriced, or when the price is going to be corrected, I should say? How do you look at risk in the crypto markets?
So today we're only focusing on the equity market, but we have a plan to at some point look into the crypto market and to apply the same methodology. The problem, as you put it, is that you don't have the same metrics, but you have a lot of things. I mean, we've been looking into, you know, that you can look into sentiment analysis on crypto. That's one way. You can look at what the whales are doing. You can look at the order book. You can look at what's happening on the exchanges, central exchanges or decentralized or DEX. But we have also another approach that we can use, and what the quants are doing is from the return in the different crypto to try to find patterns by creating what we call statistical factors. So it's the idea is to make a projection of the return of the coins. To make a projection of this onto several factors and try to find out how they replicate over time, or do they mean revert, or whatever happens to these returns. So we can apply the same concept that we've been using in traditional finance. We can use it on crypto.
How has AI been maturing over the years in your application? I know everyone's talking about ChatGPT now and how special that is, but there's more advanced AI that's already out there, and of course, a lot less as well. How are you using it at this time? Is it allowed to actually make decisions and executions for you, or just recommendations?
No, yeah. So AI is really the core of what we do today. And it's not new. Yes, ChatGPT, we're talking about it a lot today, and it's fantastic what it's proposing. You can use it. It's really amazing. But AI in finance has been here for a long time, and it's improving every day. If you look at all the research paper for the last 30 years or 40 years, I mean, there is it's not AI at the beginning. At the beginning, it was very simple linear regressions that we were doing when people started to talk about the capital asset pricing model and stuff like that. But over the years, AI has been extremely powerful because you can obviously look at more data, make more tests. The computer and GPU is much more powerful. So it allows to find what we call actually non-linearities. It means like it's what the linear model didn't find, because the linear model is like the traditional and the historical of financial theory, and we say, okay, there is the linear correlation, but now with the machine learning tools, we can find something which is in the data which is non-linear, and that can also help us, make trades on the market.
One thing that I often warn our listeners against is signing up for some of these trading bots in crypto. And there's many of them out there. Some of them say they're powered by AI. Some of them you have to put in your own indicators. But I feel like, especially in the crypto markets where there is so much less data to go by, less information to see if an asset is mispriced or not compared to other things, it just seems a little bit too risky to take on. What is your opinion on retail AI bots and plugins and things like that?
Well, you had a lot of projects. For example, in the equity world, you had Quantopian, and today you have QuantConnect. There are tools where retail can go into, like QuantConnect today. You can go into and you can put some ratios, put some chart indicators, and say, okay, whenever the RSI is here or whenever the moving average is crossing this other one, you can place a trade and you can backtest, and you can see if it works in the past. And that's kind of the problem that I would tell to retail investors. The problem is looking at, testing a strategy on the history doesn't mean it's going to work tomorrow. So if you develop something like that, you use a bot, that's fine. You can develop some nice strategies, but before trading it, you should wait. That's what actually investors, big investors do. They wait for 2.5 years. They call it out of sample to see if the strategy that developed on the data they've seen, whether it would work after or not. So the idea is that it's great to be able to use tools to develop trading strategies, but then I would say before trading it live, I would try it, like paper trade for like 2.5 years.
Yeah, that's pretty good advice. And in crypto, it might even be longer since, we've got these Bitcoin halving cycles that seem to drive different market conditions. And what's going to work in the bull market is going to be completely different from a sideways accumulation phase as well. So I think that's important for crypto traders listening to know also. When you're backtesting, you need to backtest in the environment that you're currently in if you're trying to make those active trades. What kind of hedge funds or, big firms are using AI trading on their desks right now? If, Credit Suisse had AI, would they be in a better position than they unfortunately are in now? What's your take?
For Credit Suisse, I don't kind of tell you, but that's the these guys. Actually, I think that the traditional Swiss bank asset managers, they're looking about, they're trying to they should be, that's what I assume at least, they should be taking low risk investment because they need to have clients. And basically the clients, they are very, they are like family offices and probably very wealthy individuals. They're happy to have a return of 6 or 7% per year. I mean, that's actually pretty good. So they should not be here taking a lot of risk. But somehow they've been pushed to take risk, and that's a pity.
Speaking of risk, that seems to be the main message that the SEC is sending to American companies is they need to disclose risk to the average person, and whether it's, some giant 70-page prospectus that no one's going to read or just a simple disclosure saying that you can lose money. I'm not really sure what they're looking for, and I don't think they're sure either. Can you give us kind of a bullet list of different risks that we need to look for before making an investment or a trade, whether it's duration risk, platform risk? I mean, the list keeps going on and on the deeper down the rabbit hole you get.
Are you talking about crypto investment?
Or even just trading, what are some of the risks that you need to be aware of?
Yeah, that's a complicated question because if you look at any prospectus or annual report, you have the management discussion and analysis where they list all the risk. So that's probably some place to start. You can go to for equity, you can go to the sec.gov and you take any 10K, 10Q, actually it will be 10K, the annual report. And they have to disclose the risk. And on each risk, you have to find out whether it's really standard risk that any annual report would have or whether it's specific to this company. And then you have to ask yourself, is this a risk I want to take? And another thing which is interesting is to look at the change from one year to another. Because when the management is facing a new difficulty in their business, they will add a new risk factor that was not there before. There was actually a teacher from Harvard who studied this with AI, actually. He looked at all the changes in annual report from 1 year to the other. And he was saying that he was calling this the lazy feature, because usually they copy and paste from 1 year to the other the risk factors. So it's like they are lazy, because it's the lazy quote. It's the advisor is just preparing, the legal advisor is preparing the annual report from 1 year to the other on this part, actually, on this part of the annual report. But when they change it and they had something new, a new risk factor, he figured out that actually it was always a sign that the stock was going to go down. Obviously, because more risk is as a higher risk as an impact on return, you know, higher risk, lower return. So that's how I would start with this, with the annual report. And it's available at the sec.gov for the year. And for the crypto, it's more complex. You know, I was talking this weekend with an investor. He said that when he wants to invest in a token, he's having some guys to make an audit of the smart contract. And sometimes he finds problem. And that's an issue because, yeah, it's great because everything is on chain and you can figure out, I mean, it's here, you can read it, you know. But I mean, not everybody, not all the investors who invest in crypto will have the skills to go through the smart contract and find out that there is a problem at some point in the smart contract, that they can get the funds out of the smart contract or whatever. So it's I think it's more complex.
Yeah, I think that's a great point as well. You know, we just saw Euler Finance hacked for almost $200 million. They've had 6 audits on their platform that were passed, but they made one little update since, and that's what got them. So if you're a big investor, you know, you could spend a few thousand dollars to get a current audit before placing a position, but the rest of us don't have those kinds of features. And then you've got to think about your own OPSEC security and risk. You know, what kind of wallet are you holding this in? What else are you doing with this wallet? Are you trying to mint random NFTs and trade on DEXs you've never heard of, and you're granting permission for these things to access tokens in your wallet? Or maybe you don't even know, but you're not getting the right kinds of warning messages. There's that risk as well.
But I think maybe the best, because as you said, you know, a retail investor will not be able to read the smart contract of all the tokens he wants to buy. So maybe one way to reduce the risk is to is diversification, maybe, you know, just very simple.
Yeah, I think that is the most simple way to approach risk, is don't have any one single point of failure anywhere in your portfolio, whether it's exchange, token, wallet, where you're storing your seed phrases, anything. And there's still so much upside in the crypto industry. Even if you do take a big hit, chances are you'll make it up in the next bull run if you're holding some quality stuff and doing good research and things like that. Speaking of good research, how can we access CrunchDAO and participate and learn some of the knowledge and wisdom from these amazing data scientists?
So there's one thing that we're doing. There's one framework that we've developed, which is called CrunchDSci, which is a decentralized science. And it's the beginning. But on this platform, we want to share most of the research that we do. It's like open source research, but it's even a little bit more. Because any data scientist or any researcher, PhD, can come up, read the paper, and propose changes like you would do in coding with GitHub. And we do it with IPFS. So somebody would propose some changes. We would vote on the changes with the token. And then if the change is accepted, then we will see it, and it will be immutable. We will see it over time. And if a change is rejected, we will also see it. So we know why we rejected something. So that's a great thing. And we're sharing a lot of what we do. Basically, we've done some presentation, machine learning presentation recently. You can find them on either on Twitter or on Discord channel that we have. And also then on this DSci framework that we've developed.
I love that. I've been dreaming of contributing to the DSci space for a couple of years now, and it seems like it's finally the right time to jump in. It's a great community. What do you think the real potential of the whole DSci space could be?
So You know, the thing is that when you, I mean, we, in our case, because we do a lot of research, we start the research looking at basically the research paper that have been done in the past. In finance, you have so many research papers that there's always something to learn. But we found it very difficult to apply this research. I mean, we see a fantastic research paper on the subject that is really keen for us. And when we try to replicate, we find it extremely difficult to get exactly the same data as the guys used. Make exactly the same spreadsheet and to make calculations and to get to the same result. And even sometimes we feel that the results are not actually, as you said it before, sometimes it's overfitted. I mean, you find a solution that works, but if you change a little bit the parameters, then it doesn't work anymore, doesn't stand anymore. And so for us, it's very important, and that's why we want to make this DeSci framework. It's important for us to say, okay, let's do research and let's share it. And this is true with finance because we can share the data, some data. We can have also spread some code, like some spreadsheets that we do and ask people to tell us what is wrong in what we do. We want to learn if we do something wrong. We're happy that somebody comes and says, hey, that's wrong. We're going to win, you know, probably 1 year of research. So that's good for us. But in any other industry, you will have this really helpful also. You know, in the medical industry, biotech industry, we think that, that it's really useful. Now, there's a drawback on this, that, and probably that's why the research paper that you have online doesn't tell you everything, because somebody who's doing research, he wants to keep his IP also. So there's that's this issue where if you want to keep the IP, you don't want to share everything totally. You don't want to be totally transparent. But we still think that probably, you know, 80% of the research that is done could be shared and a beneficiary to everybody.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge leap forward for mankind, and it can't be understated enough. Yeah. So really excited to see what else continues to grow out of that space. And it's amazing that you guys are doing that. So thank you so much. Before we let you go, just a few further questions. Who's someone that you really admire in this crypto space since you've been on your journey here?
So, yeah, for me, it would be Vitalik Buterin because he created the Ethereum. I'm more at ease with Ethereum than Bitcoin. You know, as a traditional banker at the beginning, I did not see the value of Bitcoin. I can see it now today, you know, with what is happening with the banks, SVB problem and Credit Suisse. And I can see the interest to have Bitcoin, but it took me a long time, you know. But for Ethereum, I mean, this is really, it's been great from the very first day when I saw that you could put a smart contract online that everybody could execute it. And that it was totally transparent. I found it really fantastic. And the guy did this very young. He even dropped out his university to do this business. So I found it, the guy is really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of the most common answers. Vitalik has a ton of fans on here. We got to get him on the show at some point. So he has really contributed to this space pretty much just as much as Satoshi at this point, if not more. I know that's going to get me some heat from people, but I don't care. And lastly, before we go, what's one company that you think is going to have the greatest impact on the crypto space going forward?
CrunchDAO.
Love it. All right. Well, we're definitely going to have to keep our eyes over there, continue reading your research. And thank you so much. If people want to continue to follow you and CrunchDAO, where should they go?
They can go on the website crunchdao.com, but they can go into the Discord. Our Discord, you can find it on the website and follow us on Twitter, CrunchDao also.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And we'll be back next week with another great guest here at the Crypto 101 podcast. Thanks, everyone.